His Hands and His Feet, an Easter sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
Dear sinner, dear doubter, dear skeptic, see His hands and feet. The forgiveness of my sin lies in the hands and the feet of the crucified and risen Jesus.
And we'll send you a CD of this sermon for any size gift during the Easter season. Make a secure online donation today, issuesetc.org. Thanks for thinking of us during the 50 days of Easter.
That's not going to stop me from going down to the Pentagon and praying for our men and women. I just won't be participating in their formal function.
The idea that if we just be nice, we can build bridges and break down barriers is a Western notion that's based on an ignorance of what the vast majority of people in Islamic countries are taught.
Religious freedom and pluralism necessarily involve discussing, questioning, and even criticizing each other's religions or beliefs.
We need to hear from the pulpit that Christ saved us completely. He's not there to woo us. He's not there to show us how pretty he is. He's done the saving.
I'm from Lincoln, Nebraska, and I'm a Macintosh software engineer, and I love Issues Etc.
Well, the headline reads, human ancestors may include Neanderthals. DNA fragments indicate a 1-4% of the genome of non-Africans today comes from other species. Now, that's what they're saying. The Neanderthals were another species of human being. Well, is that true? And the picture depicts someone that looks a kind of subhuman holding a big rock over his head, a Neanderthal as we usually picture them. What does this mean? And were there, evolutionary dead ends before, at least as the evolutionists tell the story, before we got to full-blown modern human beings? We're going to be talking about the genome of Neanderthal here on this Monday afternoon, the 10th of May. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Frank Sherwin will join us for the first half hour. Then Deaconess Pam Nielsen with us for the second half hour. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson. The Ascension of Christ will be the subject. And then, in the second hour of the program, like we did on Friday before Mother's Day, so on this Monday after Mother's Day, we will reassemble our Mother's Roundtable, Deaconess Pam Nielsen, Sandra Ostapowicz, and Rebecca Curtis, for a conversation with you about the challenges and joys of motherhood, going through some of your questions and your comments for that second hour of the program. You can join us for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943. We are coming to you live this Monday. You can email us here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or you can Twitter us @issuesetc. Before we bring on our first guest to talk about the genome of Neanderthal man, let's hear the whole story from ABC.
We all make so many jokes at the expense of the beleaguered Neanderthal man. Tonight, there is new science that should give them some respect. Here's John Berman.
The Neanderthal, that beastly evolutionary outcast, thought to be extinct for 30,000 years. But scientists believe they've picked up the trail of that hairy historic reject in the most surprising of places.
In us, many of us anyway, there is new evidence that humans inherited up to 4% of our DNA from Neanderthals.
The study in the journal Science is based on painstaking research into three Neanderthal bone fragments. Scientists reconstructed the Neanderthal genetic code and compared it to modern humans from across the globe and found there was up to a 4% match with humans everywhere but from Africa. The theory is that our human ancestors migrating out of Africa some 70,000 years ago had some amorous encounters with Neanderthals somewhere in the Middle East.
We mean that they interbred or they had sex.
This is the first real evidence Neanderthals and humans had kids, which means, despite the old assumption that Neanderthals disappeared from the evolutionary chart,
Neanderthals aren't quite extinct. They all live on a little bit in many of us.
So next time you spill beer at the game, you really are a little bit of a Neanderthal. John Berman, ABC News, New York.
Joining us to talk about this story, Frank Sherwin. He's a regular guest, a zoologist, and senior science lecturer for the Institute for Creation Research based in Dallas. Frank, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate the opportunity.
A part of the headline says that Neanderthal was a different species than we are. Is that true?
Well, according to traditional ways of thinking in regard to the science of biology, of course, a species would be that two individuals can interbreed and produce fertile offspring. So it would be quite wrong, due to this new story, to say that Neanderthals were a different species, because if we're carrying the genes of Neanderthals, allegedly, then Neanderthals were as human as you and I.
So they're kind of playing fast and loose. I mean, they want Neanderthal to be pre-human, sub-modern human, but yet their own research seems to indicate otherwise.
Exactly. What we say at ICR is man is has always been man, that we don't have a subhuman ancestor, that people were created by God, fearfully and wonderfully made, as the psalmist said, and we have been created by God to have fellowship with him through the person of Jesus Christ. I think it's interesting, Todd, that an evolutionist by the name of Colbert said, and I quote, "Perhaps no aspect of evolution has received such intense study as human evolution. Yet this is a subject concerning which there is much debate and about which there is much still to be learned," end quote. And that comes from a 2001 edition of Colbert's text. So we find that even in this 21st century, this strange and very bizarre idea of human evolution hasn't even got off square one yet.
What about the remains that they find of so-called Neanderthal? What about it leads evolutionists to categorize them as lower down on the evolutionary chain or pre-human?
Good question, Todd. Basically, it's because of their physical manifestation, their physical makeup. In biology, we call it the morphology. They seem to have a heavy brow ridge, beetle browed, as the phrase goes. But we have to be careful, because there are people groups, and notice I didn't use the word races. We believe as creationists there's one race, and that's the human race. But there are people groups out there, Todd, that have a heavy brow ridge and are just as human as you and I. For example, the Eskimos, that people group has a real heavy brow ridge, and yet they're just as human as everybody else.
So what are we really looking at?
What we're looking at is basically a people group, a group of individuals that had 46 chromosomes that were just as human as you and I. Put them in a business suit, have them walk down the street, they go completely unnoticed. And so this is really just a tempest in a teapot, a mountain out of a molehill. We're looking at 100% human beings.
So within the parameters of ordinary modern human variation, in terms of the length of the bones, the thickness of the bones, shape of the skull, all those kinds of things, is it safe to say that the remains that we find of so-called Neanderthal fall well within those parameters?
Yes, we would say so, simply because, and again, Todd, the litmus test is that they could interbreed with people. And so we're talking about people interbreeding with people. And so when I was a kid, a long time ago in Illinois, growing up, I was taught, of course, the evolutionary party line that Neanderthals were some kind of subhuman, beetle-browed, barrel-chested individuals. And that has been shown to be false. As a matter of fact, New Scientist said just this these last couple of weeks that the Neanderthal genome reveals interbreeding with humans. Well, that again, that goes along with this definition of what a species is.
Are they found, given this the notion that we're talking about a people group that has their own kind of unique morphology because perhaps interbreeding or isolation from others or any reason for it, do we find Neanderthal all over the planet? Do we find the remains everywhere?
Well, you know, good question. Again, what we find them, of course, in Europe, and that's what got people's interest, is that they're found in Europe, and those are the traditional Neanderthals, the letter T, in the German area around what is now Germany. But we've also found Neanderthal remains in the Middle East, in the Israel, Egypt area around there in the Middle East, and Neanderthals have been found in other areas as well. And so I don't want to say they're ubiquitous, but they have been found in a number of places.
The picture is of, it's kind of the cartoon. He wears fur, he has long hair, he's covered with hair. He carries a club. He lives in a cave. And that's kind of the typical caveman Neanderthal picture that we have. How close is that to what we believe is an accurate picture of the life of this people group?
Well, that's hardly accurate at all, since now we're finding out that Neanderthals seem to have a belief in an afterlife. They would bury their dead, bury them with artifacts such as flowers and such. So, again, we would say at ICR that people have been smart from the start. It's a good phrase for creationists to use. Otherwise, we would also say that people have always been people. So that's an evolutionary supposition, this beetle-browed individual with a club over one shoulder dragging a woman by the hair. I mean, those are just evolutionary ideas. What we like to say at ICR is, who were the cavemen? Question mark. Answer. Men who lived in caves. And today's housing crisis, that's not a bad idea. And so, you know, just because people live in caves doesn't make them some kind of subhuman ancestor. As a matter of fact, there are people today that live in caves.
When we come back from this break, we're going to spend some more time with Frank Sherwin of the Institute for Creation Research based in Dallas. It's Monday afternoon, May the 10th. 10 more minutes with him talking about the genome of Neanderthal. It's in the news. The headline again, human ancestors may include Neanderthals. They're talking about interbreeding, which means they're not a separate species, not by any stretch of the imagination. And we don't have to cross a line of species to get from Neanderthal to modern humans. Our call-in number for this hour and the next, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org. Twitter us at @issuesetc. And in advance of that second hour's program, where we'll have our Mother's Roundtable reconvened here in the studio and on the telephone, you can also leave questions or comments on the joys and challenges of motherhood at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. We'll be right back.
His Hands and His Feet, an Easter sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
Dear sinner, dear doubter, dear skeptic, see His hands and feet. The forgiveness of my sin lies in the hands and the feet of the crucified and risen Jesus.
And we'll send you a CD of this sermon for any size gift during the Easter season. Make a secure online donation today, issuesetc.org. Thanks for thinking of us during the 50 days of Easter.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology, and we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
Hi, this is Ville calling from Finland. I believe the day will come when you cannot enter the office as a pastor in the ELCA unless you subscribe to the ordination of gays and lesbians. And why do I believe that? Because Americans are sinners like we Finns are.
Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. IssuesETC.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about Neanderthal. Frank Sherwin is our guest, a zoologist and senior science lecturer for the Institute for Creation Research based in Dallas. I want to pick up on something you said before the break, that cavemen were men who lived in caves and that people live in caves today. Could it be that a large part of the conclusions that have been drawn about Neanderthal really come from kind of a stereotype, if you will, of the earliest archaeologists who found these remains, believing that if they lived in caves, they must have been a more primitive form of the human form?
Right. In other words, it's a type of circular reasoning that they consider evolution to be an incontrovertible fact, and therefore they're going to find evidence for this alleged fact of evolution, and any kind of evidence they find would have to be shoehorned into their preconceived idea that evolution is a fact. And so when we find items in a cave, I mean, you can draw conclusions, and that's where we find, for example, people who do police work. They have to work on evidences to come up with a conclusion. But in this case, the evidences are pretty sparse, few and far between. And so we would say that man has always been man, and we've yet to see any compelling evidence to the contrary.
Did they use tools, language? You mentioned before that they had, or at least we might infer that they had certain religious beliefs about an afterlife.
Right. Now, you know, we have to be careful when we start drawing conclusions, since, you know, this occurred in the past, and we can look at skull casts and see impressions on the skull, something called Broca's area, which has to do with language development and perhaps utilization. But again, we have to be very careful. But looking at the physical evidence, as I mentioned earlier, about belief in an afterlife and all that, there's even some indication that they might have had musical instruments. You know, there's an indication there, but I don't want to draw any hard and fast conclusions. But it certainly goes with the contention that man has always been man.
So to kind of round this out, how would you describe the relationship between modern human beings and what we call Neanderthal, and if we were to, you know, somehow transport ourselves back to when this people group lived in large numbers together, what we might find there?
Well, you know, that is good, and that's going to it would take a lot of investigation and research, and unfortunately, we really can't say definitively some hard and fast statements in regard to Neanderthals, except what we have been finding, as I'd mentioned earlier. But it looks like, according to one creation dentist who lives in New Jersey, who's done a lot of extensive work in the area of Neanderthal research, it looks like Neanderthals lived for perhaps several decades longer than your average human group does today, which does, I think, lend credence to the biblical model. So Neanderthals looks like they were just a unique, very robust people group, much like we find robust people groups today in various areas, and that they lived for perhaps longer than the average human lifespan.
How should we distinguish between the division that evolutionists want to drive between modern humans and Neanderthal, and those divisions that we ought to be making between other alleged precursors to human beings?
Well, you know, again, we would say that Neanderthals and people, according to Science Daily, New Scientist, National Geographic, and others, it looks like Neanderthals could interbreed freely with people. So we're looking at a people group, basically. Neanderthals and people, and Neanderthals were people. So we're looking at the genus Homo sapiens, genus species Homo sapiens. And the next jump from that is a significant jump into the orangutans and the apes and so forth. And we find that man was created as man, and then you have these orangutans, apes, and monkey group and so forth. We just have not found any compelling link between these two groups.
So for drawing that very kind of stereotyped march of evolution that we often see in old textbooks,
right,
from very small little tree-dwelling creatures up to the fully erect bipedal modern human being, where would the big gap exist?
Well, that's good. That's called the linear model of human evolution, starting with some kind of four-legged creature who's more prone to stay in the trees, and then your individual is on the far right-hand side of the progression. And so what we'd find is that there is a very clear demarcation and distinction between these two groups. People have always been people. Apes have always been apes. I spent 14 years almost in San Diego. Went to the San Diego San Diego Zoo a bunch of times. The only creature that evolutionists like to say is close to man is the living pygmy chimpanzee that spends 10% of its time walking on two legs. And you can tell it doesn't like to do that, but two-legged bipedal effort does not link us with the chimpanzees.
So you said at the beginning of our conversation that to discover that Neanderthal and modern human beings, as they say, interbred and produced fertile offspring is to clearly indicate that we're talking about the same species rather than two different species. How would you rewrite the headline? The headline as it is right now in the news account I see reads, human ancestors may include Neanderthals. DNA fragments indicate that 1% to 4% of the genome of non-Africans today comes from other species. How would you rewrite that headline so that it more accurately told the story?
Well, more accurately, we would say that Neanderthals are human. That's how I'd say it. Neanderthals are Homo sapiens.
It's interesting because the conclusion of the story, Frank, is that we're Neanderthals.
Yeah, that's it. You know, and again, it's the evolutionary idea that they've got to drag us down to a subhuman type ancestor, that we're no better than any of the animals, and therefore, I have a textbook right here in my office. I'm looking at it right now. It's a decade old, but the two secular authors go out of their way to attempt to link people with mushrooms and toadstools and some of the quote unquote lower life forms. And so this is the same example, where instead of elevating the Neanderthals to humans, it's a lot politically correct scientifically to drag the humans down to the quote-unquote level of Neanderthals.
Do you think that those dedicated to the evolutionary model of human development, do you think any evidence, we got DNA comparisons between Neanderthal and modern humans now, any evidence will be sufficient for them to abandon their model of human evolution?
Well, you know, that's good to them, to your committed evolutionist, neo-Darwinist or modern-day evolutionist. There is no evidence that would convince them that evolutionary process did not occur and that man did not evolve from some subhuman primate ancestor allegedly 6 to 8 million years ago. No evidence is going to show that the contrary, simply because, Todd, evolution is the only show in town, and that the alternative, capital T, capital A, the alternative to evolution simply will not be considered.
Someone comes up to you at the water cooler or across the back fence sometime this week and says, Frank, what does it mean? You're a zoologist. What does it mean what they've discovered about the genome of us and Neanderthal?
Well, I'm very excited. We're as excited now about this discovery, perhaps not as much, but excited as we are in regard to the discovery of soft dinosaur tissue made by Mary Schweitzer and her secular colleagues. This is an exciting discovery because we have maintained that Neanderthals have always been human, looking at the remains, funereal type of burial practices and all that. There's clear evidence that Neanderthals were simply a group of humans. Now this pretty much quenches it, and it says that this is, in fact, what creationists have been maintaining, that if we're carrying the alleged genes of Neanderthals, we were interbreeding people with people, just as creation scientists maintain. So we're, as we say in Texas, we're grinning like a butcher's dog.
Frank Sherwin is a zoologist and senior science lecturer for the Institute for Creation Research based in Dallas. You'll find a link to the Institute for Creation Research under the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Frank, thanks for being our guest.
Pleasure. Always happy to do that.
When we come back from this break, Deaconess Pam Nielsen will join us for a rare visit in studio today. Usually she joins us on Mondays to teach a Sunday school lesson, and she does that today as well. We'll talk about the ascension of Christ. Christ ascends into heaven. Does that mean he's gone? Does that mean he's left us behind? Then Pam will be with us for the second hour of the program. She's going to join us in a different capacity as a working mother of some grown kids, although they grow up slowly sometimes. And we'll have our Mother's Roundtable. It's kind of a bookend on Mother's Day from Friday's program when we started that roundtable. They'll all be back. Deaconess Pam Nielsen, Rebecca Curtis, and Sandra Ostapowicz. And we'll take your questions and your comments on the joys and challenges of motherhood. In fact, during that second hour, we're going to give away two copies of the book Mommy Promises by Julie Stiegemeier to listeners with the best questions or comments on the joys and challenges of motherhood. Any question or comment you might have in our Mother's Roundtable on this Monday afternoon, May the 10th, our call-in number for the remainder of this hour and into that roundtable hour as well, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org or Twitter us at issuesetc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
So what's the fad du jour at your church? Beth Moore, Rick Warren, post-emergent, pre-emergent, or some other move of the spirit that hasn't quite hit you yet? At the Brothers of John the Steadfast, we're kicking it old school. And by old school, I mean the 1580 Book of Concord. Check out our website for a list of confessional study groups, or if you have one at your congregation, you can let us know. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Hopefully, moms everywhere are still basking in the warmth of Mother's Day as a result of being treated so well yesterday. Mother's Day is important. After all, where would we be without mothers? We wouldn't even be here. You're listening to this radio broadcast because your mom chose life. You've enjoyed an education, employment, and possibly having a family because your mom said yes to God's will that you be born. Your mom's sacredness for human life must be passed to you, and you must pass it to the next generation if the world is to continue. It said, a baby is God's opinion, the world should go on. Let's thank our mothers for giving us life. In honor of your mom, encourage other women facing uncertain times to give life to their babies.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.